Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour, the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints. And joining us today is Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager of College Personnel, Jeff Ireland, entering your 11th year, if I am not mistaken. Correct, sir?
That is correct. Good to be with you, Mike.
Thank you. As always, you are on the road, as most college personnel, all of your team and yourself included. You don't stay at home and just take phone calls. You're out on the road.
That's correct. I'm, as we say, beating the bushes.
I understand. So the first four are done. Obviously, would like to have that first W. You get 31-19, the final in Buffalo. Just a hostile environment, tough place to win. They haven't lost there since November of 23 in the regular season. You do a lot of things right. 21-16, start of the fourth, make it 21-19. Again, you are judged on wins and losses. We get it. We all get it. But you take the positives of a young, new, fresh-looking faces and build on that, correct?
Well, you do. You know, there was a lot of things we did right and obviously some things we didn't do right. But I thought we took a step forward in the right direction in terms of complementary football. You know, we cut down on our penalties, just did some, you know, did some right things in the game that make us feel like we're getting better. That's a tough place to win. It's a tough team. You know, obviously at the end of the day, we didn't get it done. And until we go back to the drawing board and we try to make some of those corrections to where we're, you know, falling short. And I think our coaches have a great outlook on this week. I was there on Monday and, you know, we're still positive. You know, the team is staying together. Alan, Brandon, Doug, they're all doing a great job, Phil. Know, keeping the team together and, you know, really kind of excited to see how we play on, you know, this Sunday.
And not that you needed it, but you have this opportunity to show how penalties so impact a game, because you didn't, I think you had four and some of those, one of those was late, but they had 11 and it ended up, one of them was a holding on a punt that they finally got right. And so instead of you having the ball at your own 31, you had it at their 49. So, again, it's not like you needed examples of impact, but it was impactful for Buffalo. They were – it impacted their game. And so you got to see the flip side a little bit of how it impacts another team.
Now, there's no doubt, because those did impact our game really the first 3 weeks. Those impacted our game. In the negative. So we saw this week where, you know, you can have a really good football team and high penalties. They will change the outcome of a game. And unfortunately, you know, they were able to overcome some of their penalties. And first through 3 weeks of the year, we weren't able to overcome some of those penalties. So just kind of a difference in where those two teams are right now. But we're getting there. I'm excited about this young team.
We won't spend a lot of time looking back at Buffalo, but the ability, whether by interception, punt return penalties, to start that many possessions, four of them in their territory, just, again, enables a teaching experience of you're not going to get that many chances against a team like Buffalo. And when you do, you need to cash in. And those missed opportunities played such a huge factor in the final outcome.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Mike. You know, when you have, you know, that many possessions on that side of the football, you got to take advantage of it. The interception we threw down there in the red zone, that was a tough one to overcome. That was would have put us in a really good position in the first half. And, you know, whenever you're having to kick field goals and settle for 3 points down there in the red zone, you know, those aren't ideal either, especially with a team like that. You got to score touchdowns. But again, young quarterback, kind of a young football team and a lot of senses, and we'll learn from those things and we'll get better at it.
Your thoughts about Spencer and his start? I mean, fifth rounder. He and Tyler Shuck both unbelievably celebrated their a birthday on the same day, born a year apart in Arizona. But just his ability, certainly, you know, with his feet in the last game, but it just overall, I kind of wipe out the Seattle game. There were so many, it was such an aberration to the other three games. Your thoughts about Spencer and his progression?
I think he's gotten better. Maybe they take the Seattle game out, but I think he's gotten better every week, especially this week. He's really done a really good job protecting the football. For the most part, he's making better decisions. He's a quick processor of information, and he's got a really live arm. He gets the ball out very quickly. I like to see a little bit better location on some balls. Just putting it in front of the ball, in front of the receiver, so the receiver can run after the catch. So those are the little things he's getting better at. You can see him getting better each week. Still some things to grow with and get better at, just a couple corrections here and there. Maybe he should have pitched the ball to Kendre on that goal line play versus taking it. The defender played it right down the middle, so it wasn't a bad decision. But you probably want to put the ball in the hands of the ball carrier versus the quarterback. But overall, I've been very impressed with how he competes. I think his teammates respond to him very well. He's got great command of the huddle. And you're not going to get too many people with better arm talent than Spencer Rattler. He really can throw the ball. There's a couple of times he's rolling to his left. Momentum's rolling left. He throws it back to his right and puts it perfectly in the hands of the receiver. He's unfortunate that he hasn't got that win yet, but it's coming. It's coming. He's such a great competitor and really proud of how he's approached some unforeseen circumstances, but he's really competing hard and he's doing a good job.
Need to take a quick break. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour. We are with Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager, College Personnel, Jeff Ireland. Back after this on the Bullseye New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back. It is the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, and talking with Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager of College Personnel, Jeff Ireland, on the road, as he said, beating the bushes, trying to find that next guy. And people probably don't appreciate the closeness. I'm not talking about necessarily personally, but the closeness that a college scout and yourself will have with your draft picks. You are tied to them. And, how they perform is kind of how you are judged. And the ability to see Kendre Miller, who we've been waiting, and to be healthy and to make runs and cutbacks and vision and the 18-yard touchdown, it's exactly what we've been waiting to see.
Well, there's no doubt. As a college director, you're tied to those guys. You saw something. Unfortunately, in Kendre's situation, we haven't seen it in the year. He was hurt last year, and there was glimpses here and there. Obviously, the first year, we were really excited about him. He kind of hurt, dinged up last year, and then, you saw it pretty quickly in training camp, So we're excited to see Kendre. You're obviously really kind of patting yourself on the back or patting the scouts on the back, for the guys that jumped on the table for him as well. And I'm just proud of really all of our draft choices this year. All of them did a pretty good job this last game, and Kendre in particular.
We were talking with Teron Armstead a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me that there was somebody for him that was jumping on the table draft night. That must be a thing? Coaches and scouts jumping on tables, beating the bushes for guys?
Well, certainly when there's a prospect at Arkansas Pine Bluff, there has to be an area scout that is identifying that player and bringing it back to the office and saying, look, I've got a guy that we should draft. And Bushrod was another one, Bloomsburg, Jari, there's guys out there that you just got to go find them, and those area scouts are the ones that are the ones finding them.
You were at Miami 2008 to 2013, the general manager. You inherited a 1-15 team, replaced, you know, half the roster, 27 new faces, nine starters. We don't use the rebuilding word around here, which is fine. I feel like it's more of a retooling. Call it whatever you want. Are there any similarities? Now, this team, not, you know, are there any similarities of what you learned in Miami that you're utilizing now?
Well, that was a completely different circumstance. You know, we do have a new head coach. When I took over Miami, we've got a new president. We've got a new vice president of football operations, Bill Parcells. We've got a change in that quarterbacks, and, you know, the locker room was different. You know, it was a completely different situation from the locker room and culture standpoint. So, you know, we needed to replace a lot of those faces to rebuild the culture of that locker room. You know, our locker room is probably one of our most prized possessions that we have with the New Orleans Saints. We have a great locker room. So I'm not necessarily turning over new faces from a culture standpoint, because we have a great culture in our locker room. We got some great leadership, you know, some great guys that love to work and have a high passion for football. You know, where we're, you know, having to turn over, maybe it's just, you know, bringing in some youth, and that was needed. I think we are tied or lead the NFL with, you know, number of young rookies that have made the active roster. I think that was 12 week one. You know, so that was needed. You know, we needed some depth at specific, you know, certain players, certain positions. And we brought in those guys to really help out our depth. And hopefully those depth players become starters in the future. And you're seeing some young guys, you know, Sanker and Quincy Riley and Stutzman and, you know, Diggs, you know, all those guys being able to come in and perform, you know, on offense. And, you know, obviously, you know, Kellen Banks is a young starter. So really excited to see what those new faces come. But I think it's a little different situation. I think this is more retool, where in Miami that was a rebuild.
And culture, you know it. You've seen it. You were in Dallas 2001 when you got there, VP of College Pro Scouting. So you had Dave Campo, and then it was your first, I'm assuming, shot with Bill Parcells. So I'm assuming that was a culture shock to go from Dave Campo to Bill Parcells, as well as Jerry Jones. And prior to that, you were in Kansas City. So you know what winning culture looks like.
No doubt. I've been around it several different times, and we have a winning culture on this football team. It's up to us as college personnel and pro personnel guys to bring the talent level up. And that's what we've got to do. We have a great locker room. We have great leadership. I think Kellen and his staff have done a terrific job of bringing our team together, not only taking over for Dennis and the culture and building on it. And I think our strength coaches have done a heck of a job getting our guys in shape and keeping us healthy. And, you know, it's a really big, it's a great team effort from all different departments. I'm just excited to see us continue to grow, you know, and continue down that path of trying to get us our first win of the season and hopefully multiple wins coming down the pike.
Did you watch the Netflix docuseries on the Cowboys, Jerry Jones and all that?
You know, I've watched bits and pieces of it. It gives me a chuckle. I have not watched all of it. Things bring back a lot of memories. But that was a different era. I was there just post that Super Bowl era. So I hear a lot of stories about what happened on the docuseries, but I was not there for those times.
Take another quick break. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold. We are speaking with Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager of College Personnel, Jeff Ireland. Quick break. We'll be right back here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints. We are talking with Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager of College Personnel, Jeff Ireland. I spoke with Michael Parenton earlier on this show a couple of weeks ago, and I said, is there any amount of money, as he's the pro personnel guy, is there any amount of money I could pay you to take your job, Jeff Ireland's job? And he was like, nope. Man, the college landscape, NIL, coaches leaving because they're tired of having to recruit their own players in the locker rooms after games, high school kids getting $4 million to go to college. Your job is a different animal than it was just a few years ago.
There's no doubt. And it's continuing to change. I mean, it seems like every year there's a whole new set of rules for college, NIL and transfer portal and collective. And, I'm learning the rules just like the college recruiters and the new college GMs are learning the rules. So, there's a lot of different questions to ask and to be answered, coming, I was at a school today, I was at Auburn, and there's, transfers from different schools, from G5 schools, and, we didn't really know the answer to some of those questions, 10 years ago. We have a pretty good feel for a couple of questions, like, how well does a kid deal with his money? How's he spending it? Is he saving it? We got a better feel for that now than we ever did. And it's, it's not surprising and then yet surprising that, some guys in college, they get money for the very first time. What do? They go out and buy two cars. Where do they park them? Well, they park them in the dormitory parking lot. They got two cars, they're freshmen. I don't know that they're red flags, but they're caution flags on how that kid's going to take care of his money. And there's a lot of education that goes into that. But, you have to really do a lot of digging because, you're going to get people that know players from different schools. And so it's put a lot of onus on us as scouts to communicate and, cross-reference where a guy's been, where a guy is, in some cases, two or three different schools. So we're doing a lot of different calling around to different schools and finding out information from different coaches. And so it really puts a lot of onus on, the scouts and their resources and sources of information, from school to school to school.
Well, I know because I've asked you this question every year. We do this every year, but I wouldn't keep asking the same question. But the landscape keeps changing, so it's a new question about the same thing. So I guess, and there was a time, if you had a kid that went to four different schools, you'd go, "Whoa, is he a problem?" Right now, you don't even think twice about it. And initially, we thought, "Well, that's COVID," but I don't think it's gonna. That's the new norm. So two questions. Yes, that's the new norm, right? And it's not a red flag to see a kid at four schools, but does not the NC2A have to do something, a cap or something, or are we just going to go 100 miles an hour forever?
I think the next year we'll see a little bit more of a constant set of rules. I think there will be a cap for most places. There'll be the one transfer portal window, which will happen in January and not one in the spring. So I think that's going to settle things down a little bit. It's not a red flag when you see a guy transfer two or three times. He's just chasing opportunity. At least that's in most cases. He's chasing opportunity and chasing money in most cases. You got to follow the tape, where the kid's been and opportunity and play time. And if the kid is chasing opportunity and not getting to play, then maybe that's the bigger red flag than anything else, is that he's chasing the opportunity where there's a better opportunity, yet he's failing to take advantage of that opportunity and get play time. That has happened. And but the guy's chasing opportunity to get a better situation and he's playing and he's taking advantage of that opportunity, then certainly that's good for him and good for us because we're getting to see him play and produce and so that gives us a better evaluation of the person and the player.
A little later in this show, in fact, coming up after this segment, we're going to talk to your third round pick from the University of Virginia, Jonas Sanker, who had this, Tyron retires first day of camp. And then, and to me, Julian Blackman was just a gift to have found on the street. And he was going to have this great learning time, and then Julian gets hurt. Jonas has one defensive snap in week one at Arizona, and then 100% of the snaps in week two in San Francisco, and comes up with eight tackles in Buffalo, the interception of Josh Allen, a football that will be on his mantle for sure, three PDs. I mean, that kid has, you talk about impact draftees, he is one of them.
Yeah, he certainly has. He's gotten better week after week. Someone that we were super excited about and the opportunity to draft him. I remember on draft day, we had him a little higher on our board, and we're excited that he fell to us. And we felt like if he had to play, there'd be some growing pains. And obviously with rookies, there are growing pains. But Jonas has certainly made an elite interception the other day. That wasn't just a great play. That was an elite playmaking opportunity, and he took advantage of it. There's not too many people in the NFL that can make that play, which makes us all as evaluators super excited about the future and excited for him to continue to get better.
You still have three games before you play your first division game. The scheduling is always befuddling to me, but the Giants come into town and then the New England Patriots. Your next two games, they're all important. Let me say that off the top. But it's time, it feels like, where you've built this foundation, progressing in the right direction. Now it's time to go out and get that W so that, one, we can stop talking about the Spencer Rattler story, and two, just for the whole team. It feels like you've done everything right to this point except get that W.
Well, that's the way we feel, for sure. And you just never know when, the team's going to come together and have that perfect game. And, we all know that right now we've got to play clean games. That's just kind of where we're at as a team, is that we got to play clean. We got to play very sound situationally. And we'd love to get that win. And we've got two home games coming up. Great opportunity to show our fans that we are building and that we are coming together, and that we're capable of closing out games in the fourth quarter, and that's what we got to do as a unit to come together and start closing these games out when we have a team in our sights. And I know that's something that our coaching staff is pressing upon our players, is, look, fellas, we've played some really good football at times during the season so far. I mean, we played some really good football. There's some really good snaps on the tape. But we have to close out our opponent when we had the dagger in our hand. And let's go get it.
Well, appreciate your time as always. 85 can be, a little tedious at times. Stay safe, and we will talk to you on Sunday. Best of luck.
Sounds great, Mike. Thanks for having me. Good luck to you.
Let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. When we come back, he has the football from future Hall of Famer Josh Allen's first interception of the season. We'll get to know Saints rookie safety Jonas Sanker when we come back on the Bullseye Saints Hour here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, and happy to be joined by Jonas Sanker, the Saints safety, third-round pick out of the University of Virginia. So third-round pick, number 93rd, the third 93rd pick, number 33. Where does number 33 come from?
It don't really come from anywhere, actually. I kind of, they sent out the available numbers, and it kind of just looked like, the best number available. So going to try to just make it my own little number.
It felt like when you came in, you were going to be in this kind of nice situation. You had Justin Reed, Tyrann Mathieu, and then Tyrann retires, but you get Julian Blackman, who to me was just an amazing find on the street. But you were going to have this opportunity to kind of learn, right? I mean, you must have felt like you were in a pretty good situation. Yes?
Yeah, no, I definitely felt like it was a good situation. And I still do. And, I think, still having, guys like Justin Reed and even, some of the other guys like Terrell, Jordan, Ugo, all those guys have played a lot of football. So, they all have a different, unique knowledge to themselves, and they all bring something different to the table. So you really get a chance to learn from all those guys and just kind of their experiences so far.
And then in week one, Blackman gets hurt. Serious, played the entire game amazingly. So you had one defensive snap against Arizona week one, and now you're the starter week two with San Francisco coming in. What was that kind of knowledge like when they first told you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was definitely ready for the opportunity and just kind of felt really well prepared. And just to talk about Julian a little bit, yeah, you know, he was great, you know, all off season, all preseason leading up, you know. I was able to learn a lot from him as well and just on his experience, you know, with the Colts and just kind of how he's gone throughout his whole journey. But, yeah, just coming in, you know, having guys who have done it and, you know, having a coaching staff that was very supportive and just, you know, made my development and my learning process a lot smoother and a serious priority, just helped make that transition, you know, really smooth and easy to kind of just jump in.
What was, if there was, camp starts here, then California, what was the most challenging part of the transition?
I think the most challenging part is kind of just understanding that, you know, you're learning your defense, you're learning all the details and nuances of it, but then you're also learning how offenses are trying to attack you. And then I think the one more piece you're learning is understanding that, you know, the offenses also prepare for what you're going to run. So, you know, they'll have their own little tricks and counters to, you know, all the calls that, you know, you're ready for. So, you know, a lot of it is just understanding what they're trying to do, just situationally how to be, you know, excellent in executing in those key situations. But, you know, you can't really cheat plays or kind of just, you know, assume that they have to run these certain things because they ran it in the past. You know, they can come out there and attack you however you want. So just having that ability to be ready for anything and just respond to what you see, I think is, you know, a challenge in itself that, you know, I think every player wants to get better at, you know, every week.
Yeah, adjust on the fly. Because if you look at week two, San Francisco, because Ike Yiadom had been there, you could feel them. They were going after him, right? I mean, you could feel as a safety, but they're going at Ike. They're, you can kind of feel it. And it felt early in Buffalo, they were going at Kool-Aid. I mean, do you kind of have to make that kind of mental adjustment when you see things happening?
Yeah, I think just, you know, understanding that, you know, the opposite team, you know, they got great players too. I think that's a big, big piece of it is just, you know, you have all the talent, you know, you can have the perfect call. And, you know, as a group, you just got to execute, you know, all 11 guys, you know. So I think, you know, being prepared and understanding that the other team is going to make plays as well, it comes down to having a next play mentality. And, you know, anybody, if you give up a play, you know, it's got to be, you know, onto the next play and just, you know, ready to come out and execute and, you know, make up for it.
Was there a time, we always ask, get this question to rookies, where you realized your physical ability that may have gotten you by at Virginia or high school won't get you by here? Like that moment, like, oh, this is different,
yeah.
Right?
No, I think, you know, I understand that the, you know, the physical ability and the physical game is, you know, different in the NFL. But I think, you know, ultimately it comes down to just how well you're prepared and how well you're able to process things allows your physical ability to take over. And I think, you know, there's guys who are, you know, subpar athletes who are able to, you know, look like athletic freaks on the field just by how fast they're able to play. So I feel like it's much more of a, you know, how fast you're able to play and how well you're able to process information and react on the fly that allows your physical ability to take over. Because there's also guys who are, you know, excellent athletes who aren't able to kind of make that next step because they aren't able to process as well.
And that's, we talk about that a lot. And that is, if you have to think, that half a beat of you having to think about the play or your position or your role, it's too late. It's the NFL, right? You have to be able to know your assignment to be able to play fast. Mm. That's the key, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about Buffalo. It always feels like the first 10 minutes of a game, it's a tough surrounding. Everything's moving fast. And we're going to get to the good stuff. Don't get me wrong. But it felt like early on in Buffalo, the tackling just wasn't where it kind of needed to be.
Mm, yeah.
Fair assessment?
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of that was, you know, I think we just, you know, weren't as ready as we should have been, just ready to play. You know, that's been a big emphasis for us is coming out to a hot start. Yeah, some of those things like missed tackles, you know, we're going to clean up and, you know, aren't going to be reoccurring things. I think we've done a really good job all year, you know, being good with tackling. And then, But yeah, kind of like I was saying, just, you know, understanding it's a four-quarter game, you know, it's a long game. I feel like a lot of the NFL games ultimately end up coming to down to the end of the game. So just being able to just kind of be consistent, you know, understanding, you know, we had a slow start, but just being able to respond and kind of keep that consistent level of focus is super important to ultimately give yourself a chance, because, it, you know, it can be easy to just, you know, you start slow and kind of keep that same slow streak, and then all of a sudden the game starts running away. So being able to, you know, respond to that and stay consistent and stay on track is super important.
Second quarter, 14-7 Buffalo, deep sideline pass. You're on Dawson Knox, batted the ball away. I mean, just kind of take me through that play, because you know it's coming up after that play. But did that just kind of give you a little confidence, you know, to be able to get up there and knock that one away?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think just comes down to making the plays that come to you. You know, when studying film, it's important for me to understand, you know, that, you know, there might maybe a couple plays where, you know, my technique will really be challenged and, you know, put in a tough spot. But for the most part, you know, as long as I trust my technique and, you know, play by my rules, you know, I'll be in good spots. So I think that play was really just a routine, you know, being in the right spot, you know, trusting my leverage and trusting my speed to be able to catch back up and make a play on the ball.
And when you say trusting your speed and catch back up, it's clearly evident on the next play. They go deep right sideline to Keon Coleman. He's got a couple of steps on the corner, but you close that gap and make that pick. Take me through that play.
I think that's just, you know, awareness. Just, you know, I kind of look over and I'm, you know, showing a little half safety before the play just to kind of protect the corner a little. And I see the corner's pressed. But, you know, also understanding, you know, my job, you know, I'm a middle of the field player. So, you know, on the snap, you know, I'm starting to work towards the middle of the field. Quarterback kind of looks at me for a second and immediately, you know, looks to the corner on that side, just knowing that I'm closing the middle. So he knows he's got a, you know, one-on-one opportunity out there. So I kind of just hang back on the hash a little bit and then just ultimately just break on the throw and just, it's a race to the ball.
So they always look at it, you know, it's on the road, but you knew it was a pick, right? But you didn't get the ball right away, right? How did all that transpire?
You said didn't get the ball away. Can you repeat that?
No. The actual ball. Like you got the interception.
Yeah.
But you just picked off the MVP and who's going to be a Hall of Famer for your first pick, his first pick of 2025. Mm. Right? They looked at the play. But you knew it was a pick already. But the ball itself, how did you get the ball?
So, I mean, I really just held on to it. I mean, you know, we went with the defense, went to the end zone, got to the sideline. And I remember handing it to one of the equipment guys. And, you know, they'll normally put like a little tag on it and then put it in your locker. So, yeah, I definitely had to hold on to that one.
That was pretty sweet when you think about it. You may look back 10, 15 years and your first pick, because he's going to be wearing a gold jacket. Mm-hmm. Your first pick came against, you know, Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Your first pick in the preseason. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We are with Jonas Sanker, Saints rookie safety, third-round pick. Take a quick break. Come back, talk a little bit more. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour, an inside look at the black and gold. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints. We are speaking with Saints safety, Jonas Sanker, third-round pick out of the University of Virginia. End of the last break, talking about the preseason pick a little bit. You make that pick, and I've gone back and done it on video. You are out of bounds with a clear 2 seconds left. But when you make that pick in the preseason, your head must be just, because the game was tied, your head must be, you're not thinking, oh, I've got time to get out of bounds, a long field goal, can I score? I mean, your head's got to be going a million different places.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. You know, I definitely had my eyes on the end zone, and, you know, make it. I think that quarterback slowed me down enough to, you know, let that other guy catch up. But in the moment, you know, I understood before the play, you know, I had 10 seconds left. And so I think after getting that interception and then making that first guy miss, I kind of knew that that second guy was going to be able to get me. But I felt like I still had a little bit of time. So I felt like I was kind of safe. Like, okay, I'm going out of bounds, but, you know, there'll still be a little time left. And then I look up and I see there's no time. So I was like, dang, like, definitely thought I had a, you know, had stepped out or had one more time.
It was preseason, man.
Yeah.
Refs are like, hey, I got a flight to catch.
Yeah,
it's preseason.
Yeah,
we got a tie game. You know, we'll let it go. But it was a heck of a play. Do you know how well do you know Chris Rumpf?
Pretty well. Yeah, I mean, I see him every day.
Yeah, So he was on the show last week.
Okay.
And so he went to Duke, and I just casually said, I'm from Virginia. And he, like, went, oh, I hate Virginia. I'm like, dude, how can you hate a state?
Yeah.
And he went, no, not the state, University of Virginia and Virginia Tech. And I said, dude, I went to James Madison. He goes, are you okay? But there's some discord there. I don't know if it's the same about UVA to Duke as it is from Duke to UVA, but that's a rivalry that not a lot of people know about in the ACC.
I wouldn't really call it a rivalry. I mean, during my time there, we used to beat up on them pretty good.
That's why you say it's not a rivalry.
I mean, we beat them.
You beat up on them.
We beat them, I think, 49-0 my freshman year. I think they actually beat us for the first time in a while my sophomore year, but then junior and senior year was kind of the same thing, just beat up on them.
Yeah, I think I get it now. I think I understand the discord. You know, I'm from Virginia. I went to James Madison, first school that actually probably made you an offer, I think, wasn't it? Wasn't it James Madison?
I think I had the Ivy Leagues first.
One of the Ivy Leagues, yeah, right.
James Madison was definitely one of the early ones I got.
And your brother is at, your dad went to Colgate, right?
Yes.
And your brother's at Princeton still?
He graduated.
He just finished.
He's working in private equity now.
Smart guy. Just Ivy League smart guy.
Yeah.
What, obviously, Charlottesville, and I didn't know much about the Covenant School. I was there in 80, I graduated in 84, was there in 85, 86, 87, so it was just opening, and your dad was the headmaster there when you were there, right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine, people always go, oh, that must have been cake. I think it's the exact opposite, right? It's much harder.
Yeah, I mean, he really wasn't too, like, I mean, he pushed us, you know, he challenged us a lot academically, but, you know, he didn't go out of his way to kind of just, you know, make every aspect of being at school harder. So, you know, it was kind of nice, you know, getting to see him at work every day and, you know, check up on us, you know, when we're, you know, playing sports and stuff like that. So, you know, I really kind of enjoyed, you know, having him around.
The decision to go to UVA right there in your hometown, easy, hard, difficult? You had a lot of schools after you.
Yeah, no, I definitely felt like, you know, it was a pretty easy choice for me, just, you know, being able to stay close to my family and, you know, help out with all the family stuff we had going on. So, you know, have a lot of siblings too, so still kind of get to be a part of their lives and, you know, see them grow up. So, you know, that was definitely a pretty easy choice for me.
How big is your family?
So I have 6 siblings, not including myself. I got 5 brothers and 1 sister.
Where are you in the pecking order, so to speak?
So I got 2 older, a 31-year-old brother and a 23-year-old, or now 24-year-old brother. And then I got a 19-year-old little brother who just started out at UVA now as a defensive back. Got another little brother who's 16, a little sister who's 13, and then a little brother who's 12.
The sister. You're the lone sister.
Yep.
Does she have any choice? Is she an athlete?
Yeah, she's an athlete. We kind of, you know, we definitely push for her, you know, to play certain sports. She enjoys playing basketball, soccer. So, you know, who knows what she'll do, but, you know, she can't help the fact that, you know, she's very gifted athlete. So
it runs in the family.
Yeah.
You talked about this a little bit earlier, and that is kind of confidence and playing with speed, and that's the only way to play that position, right? I mean, if you don't have that swagger, I've always felt you're going to get beat. That's just the nature of the business. It's the nature of the job. You just got to be able to flush it and get back out there, right? I mean, you got to have that swagger, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of that goes into, you know, you build your confidence up by, you know, how well you prepare, how well you practice. And so, you know, when you come out there, you know, in games, you feel like you've done this so many times that there's no second guessing. And then I think the confidence comes with on the field, you know, when you get beat or something. I think a lot of that just speaks into, you know, just knowing kind of why you play and just having a deeper motivation than to just, you know, other people's approval. I think when you're able to kind of find that in yourself, it, you know, you don't necessarily weigh too much on, you know, what people think of you or, you know, what people will say, you know, because this happened. I think when you're able to find that deeper, you know, reason of, you know, why you play and, you know, what your motivation is, I think it allows you to eliminate a lot of those negative thoughts.
Got to be pretty cool. Quincy Riley getting some time. Kool-Aid McKinstry. I mean, you still have Ike and you still have Justin. You still have some vets, but it's got to be pretty cool to start seeing some of the you know, some of the youth that's in that defensive secondary.
Yeah, I think we're really talented, you know, across the board, young guys and veterans. And I think, you know, we're really starting to come together just as a group. I think the corners and safeties are really starting to, you know, communicate better every week. I think the, you know, some of the corners are doing a great job stepping up in the run game as well, just tackling really well, which I think, you know, is a really positive thing to have for a team, just corners that can tackle.
Quincy
really
said he loves it.
Yeah.
He said, you know, there aren't many corners that come out right of the box and say, I love tackling. I love hitting.
Yeah, no, he's not afraid to take a shot for sure. And I think that's, you know, the same thing for guys like, you know, Alante, Kool-Aid, Ike. There's just really no fear in just, you know, getting down and just making tackles. So I think that's a, you know, something that's going to take our team a long way. And then, you know, if they continue to just kind of make those strides and, you know, keep covering the way we've seen them cover, you know, all of OTAs, all of camp, and just know the players that are, you know, we know there's no wavering confidence. You know, we know they have the confidence ability to go out and, you know, make those plays we know they can make.
I was reading a pre-draft report on you, pre-draft, so it is what it is. Let's not, whether attacking the ball or closing in on a ball carrier, first off, effort, energy, physical, very aggressive, but that sometimes the aggressiveness, attacking a ball carrier, attacking the ball itself in the air can cause issues. Have you been working on, if I were to say control, or if I've got that completely wrong, tell me what's kind of the one thing you are working on?
I think a lot of that, the feedback I was getting in that pre-draft process was about just, you know, better angles to the football and just being able to eliminate myself from, you know, taking myself out of the play or, you know, running down too soon and then, you know, having something cut back. And I think, yeah, I've definitely worked on that a lot. And I think just having more depth, you know, has helped me make, is going to help me make more plays in the run game and the pass game, just because I'm able to, you know, see more, you know, be able to process, you know, my triangle, my keys, see run pass quicker. I think those are all things that, you know, I'm continuing to make strides in every day.
And finally, you had the one defensive snap at Arizona, 100% with San Francisco, 8 tackles, huge game. And then 93% of the defensive snaps, Seattle, 98.3 in Buffalo. At this point, do you feel like a rookie anymore?
Not really. I think there's, you know, I think there was a little bit of that the first game, you know, just getting those little rookie jitters out and just, you know, understanding that, you know, I'm here for a reason. So I think I don't feel like a rookie anymore, and I feel, you know, confident enough to step up and, you know, be the guy that the team needs me to be.
Big two games at home coming up with the Giants and New England. Continued success. You're killing it, man. You got that first pick. I appreciate your time. Love talking to guys from the Commonwealth, and not everybody knows what that means. So appreciate it, and have a great rest of the season.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's our show for tonight. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth, and we will look for you next week here on the Bullseye Saints Hour, right here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.